Glad to see everybody. We're glad to have visitors in the audience. Thank you for coming our way. I told somebody I'd almost driven 2,000 miles on this whirlwind trip. I want you to know that wherever I go, you share in that preaching of the gospel. Sometimes it takes a while if you get a preacher that might go more than you were used to think that that's separate from what you do. But it's a part of what you do. Your support of me allows those kinds of things to take place. In Austin, during that meeting, one man came forward. So you never know the good. We don't know the good that can be done always. Visibly, we see some things. Saturday, I made my way back Friday to spend the night in Little Rock and then had an all-day session on prayer. And I want to talk to the elders about bringing that same set of guys and do the same thing here for a fall thing. Hope they'll like that idea because those guys have worked on a lot of material. Ryan Goodwin, I don't know if y'all have heard him, but he's an excellent guy. We need to think about getting him here sometime. Shane Carrington, you know, he was a preacher. John Duvall, I had never met before. He preaches in Oklahoma City. And there's one other guy. When you get my age, it's like going, who is he? Anyway, we had a good day. Probably 200 people were there. The lads were there. They'll be back tonight. But you're a part of that, and so I appreciate that. And I hope you understand and know that. We came back by to check on the house, and please pray that our house sells. We had somebody look at it again, but so far nobody's bit. And my wife decided that it needed to be painted in the kitchen. I think a lot of y'all ladies know, I think white's in now. And so we needed to paint the backsplash. And she came down with a sinus infection and got really sick and had to have a Z-pack and all that kind of stuff. So pray for her that things will go better. My mom's in the hospital. I dropped down to see them on the way. And after I saw them, they were doing okay, but then she got put in the hospital. So they're at that stage of life. I'm afraid that I've moved to you at the point where my parents are going to be difficult. It's just going to be ongoing, and I don't know what to expect. So I pray that you'll have patience with that. You have old people, too, in your life, and some of those kinds of things you just can't help. It's part of life, and we are told to honor our parents. So, and I'm the only one that can function in my family to do that. So, anyway, good to have you. Sorry to start out that way, but I appreciate Ross preaching. I don't ever worry about y'all if I see his name on the deal, so I'm glad that he was able to preach in my absence. Let's look at Psalms 90 together. It's one of the only psalms that I'm aware of that has at the title, if the titles are correct, they were put in place many years after the psalms were actually written, but it says a prayer of Moses, the man of God. So it's the only psalm to my recollection that is in the Psalter that was written by Moses. We usually think of him as the law. So I want us to think, first of all, of the first section of this, and it's verses 1 and 2. If you're using your version, we're going to have the English Standard on the screen. So if you just want to read along with me, we're going to read through this psalm, and then we want to think about each of its sections. Psalms chapter 90, verses 1 and 2. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth or ever, you have formed the earth and the world from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. He wants us to meditate on God's greatness. He wants us to focus on. When I think about Moses and what he and that generation saw, the mighty miracles in Egypt, we can't even begin to comprehend how God destroyed the nation of Egypt. And just systematically, because of the hardness of Pharaoh's heart, hardness of the Egyptians. Finally, at the Red Sea crossing, they saw the mighty army of Pharaoh and realized that it was the world power of that day. Every day, except the Sabbath, the daily manna fell and fed those probably at least 2 or 3 million people that wondered. Remember, there were 600,000 fighting men, and you had to be a certain age to be numbered. So you don't count all the little folks. You're not counting the women. You're not counting the older men. There was a huge number of people that God took care of in a place that could not have supported a tenth of their number. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. And then when they made it to Mount Sinai, that the mountain quaked at the top, the thunder and the fire and the smoke and the voice of God, that Moses says even, we get it out of Hebrews and not out of the book of Exodus, that he even trembled before God. You and I can look around. When I think about looking up and seeing the heavens that declare the glory of God and the firmament shows His handiwork, we need to remember God's greatness. And that needs to direct us, as I think Moses is wanting to push us and push the people that read it in his day, that ultimately Canaan is not your home. God is your home. We're just passing through. We're not to be citizens here. If you open up the book of Numbers, for instance, in chapter 33, there are named in that chapter by itself 42 different places that Israel camped. I had a thinking about it when I was thinking about this lesson. In my life, married to my wife, we've lived in 12 different houses. I don't know how many you would. And I could talk about the places that I have lived. But none of them, though they were home to us, in some ways we realize, you know, in just our life, that we're passing through. We're not citizens of this world. We're not citizens here. And we need to understand that. God is our home. And that is where we are going. The next section, 3 through 8, he talks about at the end of it. It's not at the very first, so let's read together. The severe judgments of God. Beginning verse 3, "You return man to dust and say, 'Return, O children of man, for 1,000 years in your sight are but as yesterday, when it is past, or as a watch in the night.' You sweep them away as with a flood. They are like a dream, like grass that is renewed in the morning. In the morning it flourishes and is renewed. In the evening it fades and withers. For we are brought to an end by your anger. By your wrath we are dismayed. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence." When I think about what Moses had to witness, the unbelievable rebellion of that generation, at the golden calf incident, at Sinai, Kor, Dathan, and Abiram, another time in which 14,000 are slaughtered, and on it would go till that generation would reject and would rebel, and then God would have to kill them off by wandering around in the wilderness until every one of those fighting men died in the next 38 years, one by one, to think about them buried all out in that Sinai Peninsula. Until there is none of that generation left. The anger of God against their sin and the judgment He had to bring upon them. Against the enemies, the Egyptians, the Canaanites that they would be facing. And the terrible, horrible judgments that God wipes out whole nations at times. And they're lost in antiquity, never to rise again because God had spoken that. The evil of rebellion, as He says at verse 8. When we think about the story of the Bible, Adam and Eve and Cain and then Noah's world, Sodom and Gomorrah, and you just turn to the pages of the Bible and it is sin that is on every stage. We need to understand that God cannot tolerate it. He will not tolerate it. Habakkuk said in chapter 1, verse 13, "You are of purer eyes than to behold evil, and you cannot look on wickedness." When Nadab and Abihu had committed the sin, you remember, by offering strange fire before God, Leviticus 10:3 says that Moses had to look at his brother and say about his own sons that he had just watched God slay. "This is what the Lord spoke, 'By those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy, and before all the people, I must be glorified.'" And he told Aaron, "You cannot weep for them. Hold your peace." And Aaron held his peace. You think about how hard that would have been. But what God was trying to demonstrate to the people is, it doesn't matter who it is. If somebody violates the will of God, God has the right to strike us at that moment. It is His long-suffering mercy and goodness that doesn't. He had the right to do that to Nadab and Abihu, but He has the right to do that to any sinner. It's not some minor faux pas like putting the fork on the wrong side of the plate when we sin against God. It is to recognize that our sin is deep. And that's the problem, I think, sometimes with all of us, is we don't see how deep our sin is. We don't understand how terrible a crime we have committed against God. You ever come up behind somebody who obviously doesn't take care of their personal hygiene, and they smell to high heaven, as we say, and they don't smell to themselves. They don't recognize how awful it is. I mean, it's almost like you can't stand it, and particularly if you're in a closed situation with them inside a bus or something like that. It's amazing that people all over Springdale and Rogers and all this area are going about their business today and just oblivious to their relationship with God. They have no concept. They are made in His image, and they are going to be called to account in a day of judgment because God is their Creator, and He demands of us to be holy as He is holy. They may stink to high heaven, and they cannot even smell it or see it. It's like putting a weight on a dead body that cannot feel it. Remember Paul saying to the Ephesians in chapter 4:19 that certain men who being past feeling, well, we're living in a time when people are past even feeling the shame that they ought to feel for their sins. We need to understand that God sees us and how He sees us to become right with Him. God is to be feared, verses 9 through 11. For all our days pass away under your wrath. We bring our years to an end like a sigh. The years of our lives are 70, or even by reason of strength, 80. Yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone, and we fly away. Who considers the power of your anger and your wrath according to the fear of you? God is to be feared, because as this text is saying to us, all death stems from sin. Physical death was passed upon mankind, and because mankind was removed from the garden, then all generations after die physically. But we die spiritually, as Paul wrote in Romans 5:12. Therefore, just as through one man sin entered the world, and death through sin, thus death spread to all men. This is not physical death here. Because, he says, all sin. We didn't sin in Adam. It's not what Calvinism teaches. He says because all sin. When we sin, we die. And how many scriptures say that to us? You'll not judge a father or a son based upon what the father did. The father shall not be put to death for their children, or the children put to death for their fathers. A person shall be put to death for his own sin. We are accountable to God. In Romans 3, verse 23, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And so God is to be feared. We are to have that before our eyes. The book of Proverbs opens up with that in chapter 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. In Proverbs 14:27, the fear of the Lord is a fountain of life. In Proverbs 3 and 7, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. And in the last of the psalm, he says, God is to be trusted. Beginning at verse 12. So the phrase that you remember out of this psalm. So teach us to number our days, that we may get a heart of wisdom. Return, O Lord, how long? Have pity on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us, and for as many years as we have seen evil. Let your work be shown to your servants, and your glorious power to their children. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish the work of our hands upon us. Yes, establish the work of our hands, to number our days. As Bessner said in his commentary, that was the key to holy living. No one who knew the brevity of life, the fragility of breath, could live today as he had lived yesterday. If only God's people would remember that sin has deprived a whole generation of the promised land, they would guard themselves against it in themselves. That was wisdom. Humble acceptance of one's mortality and fearful submission to the sovereign will and judgment of God. Oliver Wendell Holmes, who was a great jurist, was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court back in the late 1800s, early part of this 20th century. One time was traveling on a train where the conductors would come by and punch the tickets. And when he reached in his pocket, he couldn't find his ticket. He kept searching for it. And the man recognized, of course, that he was Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And he said, Justice Holmes, don't worry about it. Just when you find your ticket, send it to us. And he responded, young man, the problem at my age is not where is my ticket. The problem is where am I going? And he didn't mean by something like that we would think of old people not remembering where they're going when they get in their vehicle. He was talking about heaven. He was talking about eternity. He was talking about realizing that the closer we get to it, the more we recognize that. Always dealing with college kids, I remember getting a birthday wish that I wished to one of them, and they wrote back to me on their birthday was on a February date, and they wrote back and said, if you add my new age, 22, to my boyfriend's age, we still don't equal your age. And I, you know, sometimes you just want to stick your tongue out at somebody or slap them really hard. Yesterday when I was at that study, at the end of the day, we all got to talking, and I thought that John Duvall was probably my age. And it turns out he's 8 years younger than me. I was the oldest guy there. And that just does something to you. You know, you just realize that you're not on that young side of things. And you're looking the other way. And y'all can all laugh over here, and you can think that you'll never get there, but one day you're going to be exactly where I am, and you're going to be looking, and you'll understand. You'll say, well, Brother Durham tried to tell us about that. Teach us to number our days, because if we do that, we can get a heart of wisdom. We all will die, and we need to understand that. And so, number our days. It is the key to wisdom. Applications, then, that we can take away from this psalm. First of all, live a life of dependence. Live a life which we understand in our frailty. What was read to you by Ben a minute ago, all flesh is as grass. Did you hear that in the psalm? Same kind of bringing it in to Peter's statements out of Isaiah. All flesh is as grass, and all the glory of man is the flower of grass. The grass withers, and the flower falls away. Down in Texas, where I lived, was big bluebonnet country. And they are beautiful when they come out. But they only last. I mean, you've got to hit it. You have to go and see them. And sometimes the season's even shorter than other seasons. But at most, they're going to last 4 or 5 weeks. Maybe 6 if you just have really perfect conditions. But as soon as they come in all their brilliance, they fade away. And they're gone. And that would be what somebody looking out at the landscape of Palestine could think when they saw the summer, or rather the spring rains, and the flowers come, and then as quickly as they come, they fade away. So our lives are, as men. We're just vapors that appear for a little time and vanish away. Only God can say, I am. You ever thought about it? God alone can say, I am. I am the same yesterday, today, and forever. There is no change in Him. I can't say I am. And one day, all that will be left of me is a marker somewhere over a grave, and people that might have known me might say He was. And we are so forgettable. We will be forgotten in just a brief short of time. But God doesn't. He knows our life is before Him. Therefore, live a life of dependence in His sight. Secondly, focus on God. Notice again verse 1, our dwelling place. God is our place of refuge. God is our dwelling place. He who does the will of God abides forever. The Word of God abides forever in the 1 Peter passage. If we submit ourselves to that and humble ourselves to that, then we'll take refuge in Him. And as the Colossian letter says, we'll live a holy life in that understanding. If then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above. Too many of us are thinking about things here. And it's okay, we have to think about things here, but do not let it take over us. Think on the things that are above. Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote these words toward the end of his life. Goodbye, proud world, I'm going home. Thou art not my friend, and I am not thine. We need to remember that. Live each moment for eternity. And then as verses 8 and 9, as we said at the end of that second section, you have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. For all our days pass away under your wrath. We bring our years to an end like a sigh. We need to fight against sin. We need to be like the Olympians, as 1 Corinthians 9 said, the athlete who disciplines their body daily and brings themselves into subjection to God. Every one of us fight battles. The sin that I fight against may not be exactly what you fight against. It may be that you have a proclivity for alcohol or for drugs or for pornography. But every one of us have something we fight against. It may be short temper. It may be jealousy. It may be anger. We need to always recognize who we are and fight against it and discipline our bodies like every athlete. And remember the brevity of life, how short it is, how it can be taken away from us in a second. And look to what we need to look to. Finally, rejoice in the mercy of God. In verses 14 and 15, satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us and as many years as we have seen evil. Let the favor, verse 17, of the Lord our God be upon us and establish the work of our hands. The cross of Jesus Christ forever declares that God loves us. God alone can establish our work. All that we do otherwise comes to naught. The home that we're trying to build, only God can establish that. The church, the local church that we're trying to build up, only God can establish that. He loves us. He wants us to seek Him. And Moses is reminding us, teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. If you're subject to heaven's invitation this morning, Jesus said, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. If we can help you to do that, we stand ready. If you need to come back to Him, if you have not done the things that the psalm is talking about, you know your life is totally out of sync with His, and will you come all together? We stand and sing.
Would you be free from your burden of sin? There's power in the blood, power in the blood. Would you o'er evil a victory win? There's wonderful power in the blood. There is power, power. Wonder-working power in the blood of the Lamb. There is power, power, wonder-working power in the precious blood of the Lamb. Would you be free from your passion and pride? There's power in the blood. Power in the blood. Come for a cleansing to Calvary's side. There's wonderful power in the blood. There is power, power, wonder-working power in the blood of the Lamb. There is power, power, wonder-working